Hi, this is Clarissa Jacobson from Lunch Ladies, and you're listening to Extra Features Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode number 263, and I'm Kevin.
I'm the new driver.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Doug. No, you're Maxi driver.
Dylan Forevermore, the intern.
Yeah. Intern?
Yes.
What is your role in this show? We didn't see you for like 2 years, and then you come back.
You stuck me in the vault with no food.
Now I have a question. Did you find that movie I was looking for in the vault that I sent you in for?
No.
Oh, crap. Doug, we had this kid on.
I think you gave it to somebody else, just like the Wonder Woman copy you gave me that you said you gave to me.
His name was Owen. Does he need some work? We have an internship that may be opening on the show.
He's actually kind of busy right now. He's editing for his school, so.
I'd be glad to give him the job.
So what have you guys been up to? Like, have you watched anything new that I need to know about?
I've been pretty well locked down and watching stuff, so.
Have you eaten any, like, solid food? I mean, this is a good time for foodies, because, I mean, everything's open for takeout. So at least you can still go eat.
Takeout and drive through.
I'm just having liquid. I don't eat. No, it's boring.
Well, okay. Unlike you guys,
I have been watching a lot of TV. I'll give it that.
Would you like to discuss any of that? That would be a good time, I think.
Sure. I'm loving Your Honor. I finished The Flight Attendant, and that was kind of meh.
No, I disagree.
I
love
like
The Flight Attendant. Watched it in 3 days.
The story of an alcoholic.
I love The Flight Attendant. Loved it.
Flack. Not that great.
I don't know what that is.
It's on Amazon Prime. It's got Anna Paquin.
Yeah.
She's in England, and she's like a agent's helper.
Where are they showing The Flash now?
It's not on right now.
It's not on, but when it comes back, it'll be on, the CW station, so CTV related.
And it'll be on Netflix. Anymore.
It's on Netflix, actually, a day after it airs on CW.
Oh, okay.
For us.
All right.
So, two quick things before we get into the show. I went to Top Gun Burger. Oh, my God. This is the best burger I've had in months. So, big recommendation to Top Gun Burger. Number two.
Where is Top Gun Burger? What is this?
Well, it's this burger place in Toronto that I've read about, and they had a location in Scarborough. So I said, you know what? I need something to do. I just wanted to go do something. Absolutely incredible. It gets a solid 10 out of 10 burger.
So is that an essential trip?
It was for me, because I had to take my father-in-law out to get some groceries, and I was hungry.
Uh-huh.
So I stopped to get some food.
He was essentially hungry.
Yes.
Essentially hungry. And I've been watching Yellowstone, which I quite love.
I hear that's good,
I'm enjoying that. I'm almost done season two, so things are moving.
Did you drive past Harry's on the way to this Top Gun Burger?
I did, but I'm not eating at Harry's. Okay. I'd rather try something that actually...
I'm just asking a question. That's what I do.
I drove right by your house. If that's what you're referring to.
And you didn't wave hi.
Of course I did.
With his middle finger. Oh, sorry. No. No, he didn't do that.
Of course I did. I always drop by during this period of lockdown.
Well, Chris dropped by. She's 6 feet apart.
That was my transition, right?
That's your cue.
Yes. Okay. But the Top Gun Burger, not a sponsor. Lockdown.
Should be a sponsor.
Well, look into it.
Send them all to Jersey.
Lockdown. We're directed by Doug Liman, starring Chiwetel Ejiofor, Anne Hathaway, Dooley Hill, Jasmine Simon, Katie Leung, Ben Kingsley, Ben Stiller, Stephen Merchant.
Hold on. You can't say Doug Liman, but you could say that Chiwetel Ejiofor perfect.
Well,
that's impressive. That is impressive.
I love pronunciations.
It's a cookie for you. Right here, this one's for you.
Wait, I got to do on speaker. Hold it back up. I want to eat it.
There you go. That is impressive. So, lockdown. Doug, this is your list. So, Why are you watching Lockdown?
Because I thought it was the first big release of 2021. I kind of enjoyed this movie. I really liked the chemistry between Chiwetel and Anne Hathaway. I thought they were really good together. I thought it could have been just a solid relationship movie without the heist stuff at the end. It took a little too long to get to the heist, but I don't actually think the heist was needed. I think if it was just an exploration of the relationship between two people who were on the verge of breaking up or actually did break up before Lockdown went into place, I think that would have been just as interesting a movie. And Chiwetel Ejiofor has such an amazing voice. I could listen to him read poetry out in the streets for hours on end.
Okay, fair.
What do you guys think?
I'll add on to it. I'm on the opposite end. I wanted a heist movie, and I got a relationship movie that was basically first world problems, where it's like, look, these people are rich and they're bored as hell and locked down. Cry me a little river. I don't really care. I like the performances, did not like the characters. Took so long to get to the heist. It's a 2-hour movie, could have been 90 minutes. And it just felt like Doug Liman trying to do a combination of Soderbergh and the Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise films. And I just, that combo didn't really work for me. And it's fair to say, like, people might defend it, like, oh, it's impressive they filmed this in 18 days. But I mean, Host was filmed in Lockdown too, and that was amazing. And this one was not. Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of in the middle with you guys. I was kind of bored with the Lockdown part of it, where they're struggling. I mean, he's discovering he's got opium plants in the back, and there's an appearance by Sonic the Hedgehog, as opposed to, like, not Sonic the Hedgehog, but a hedgehog named Sonic.
Yeah.
And there's a piece of paper on the screen, and it says Bob is something. Bob is not. Bob is not. And Bob is not.
Just keep going. Bob is next.
The speaker view didn't catch it.
I was kind of bored with the relationship stuff, and I agree the first world problems thing. You know, oh boy, she has to fire some people. Oh, she has rich people who want to move her to New York. Oh, that's so awful. Ben Stiller and others make cameos. I actually perked up with the heist stuff. So I was intrigued by the inner workings of Harrods Underground and the tunnel system and the security guards and the fact that they would have a real and a fake copy of a diamond on display. And I think they take advantage of that. It was well done. And in fact, I thought Anne Hathaway really kind of came alive after the heist. She seemed to have a lot, like, a glow and an energy about her after that. And you could tell it rejuvenated their relationship, the feelings that they had for winning one another. I mean, what's wrong with homemade bread? I really don't get that. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me. So,
well, it's just so cliched. Everybody was doing it.
That's right.
Even Simon.
You know, and she bought his motorcycle and the arrogant half brother and all that. Anyway, it was okay. I didn't hate it, but I thought the heist stuff was the most interesting part about it.
So. Okay. I felt the heist was uneventful, but that's definitely where it gets some of its steam for sure.
Bob is next.
Okay. I'm sort of with Doug and Kevin on this, because, like, I felt it got too, I felt it did take too long to get to the heist. Now, and I know the pandemic was in the movie, but this is the second pandemic-related movie I've seen since TIFF. Like, I know 76 Days was a TIFF, but it was sort of a documentary on Wuhan. But I got, like, I was getting, I'm already two movies in with that topic related, and I was bored already with it. And I was happy to get to the heist, because I felt like, Doug, it was getting too long to get there. And I noticed, like, they had already said that on Google or whatever about Anne Hathaway. She sort of inserted I don't know if that was in the script or what, but she inserted, like, pushing the elevator button with her elbow instead of like, beep. But I thought that was good. And she, like, it brought her comedy timing or comedy back into it. Well, that wasn't what I meant to say, but anyway. So I'm sort of iffy on the movie.
Okay. I never liked this movie ever. I just found it long, tedious. Even the heist didn't really interest me, but I got to give Kevin credit. I do find Anne Hathaway suddenly woke up in the film. And if I need to listen to Ben Stiller whine about anything ever again, I think I might just have to turn something off. He just brings me down when I see him now. I like the Chidafil. It was my best part of this film. I like this guy. I wish he would do more stuff. I wish he'd do more interesting stuff. I mean, I even liked Red Belt he was in years ago and stuff like that. I just feel Lyman doesn't really know what to do. I just feel he doesn't get an energy or has a direction that I'm looking for here. I wanted more direction. Like, Jennifer's out on the side reading poetry? Who cares? He's making bread. His phone conversation with his brother. I'm like, I don't care. I have no interest in any of this. I understand the film's called Lockdown. I get it. My favorite scene is when he's having the interaction with the guy driving the van, the dispatch guy.
Martin, yeah.
And they get into a fight. I'm like, wow, this is the only interesting part of this movie that kind of kept me awake. And I really felt the heist didn't even wrap up. I kind of thought something there was going to happen. It just sort of did it and sort of died.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about their relationship. I'm like, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I just thought this film was just kind of meh. I didn't really hate it. I didn't really love it. It's kind of really in the middle. Just nothing ever seemed to be fleshed out for me.
I do think the end, Donald should have taken some money. I don't think he should have just let them go. He should have asked for money.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I think Donald just wanted to screw him over too. I think everybody just hates him.
I did perk up though when I recognized Cho Chang from Harry Potter on the Zoom call. One of the ones that she fired.
You're very good recognizing Cho Chang. She was there, but she got fired.
She did. You're fired.
She doesn't get a cookie.
No. Do I?
If you were here, I'd give you a whole bag of cookies.
Okay.
Because you'd be like the first person in my house in months.
Okay, fair enough.
I thought Bob was there the other day.
He wasn't allowed in. He had to stay outside. We had a lovely conversation on the porch, and Bob was cold.
Okay.
So I don't think...
Short sleeves, blah, blah.
Short sleeves in winter, Bob?
Yep.
But you knew you were coming over.
What?
Did you not know you were coming over?
Yes.
So you did. Dressed appropriately.
I did dress appropriately for me. I will never wear long sleeves. If you see me wearing long sleeves, there's a problem.
Why?
Because I don't like long sleeves.
Okay. Okay, that's fair.
Okay.
That's not fair. We live in Canada. You're not.
But I am. Yes, and I'm used to the cold, so I wear short sleeves.
But you'll
never see me in long underwear either.
Porch, not even sitting, standing, coming to get something, and you were cold.
A little cold.
And nothing said, I gotta go, I'm cold.
I would never say I'm gonna go, I'm cold. I just...
Oh, so that was just an excuse.
No, it wasn't. I was cold.
Okay.
But I will never say, I gotta go, I'm cold. I won't say that.
I guess you were just going, you couldn't hear the sound of metal.
Yeah, I was looking for that transition.
No, neither could the actor who was in the movie either.
Sound of Metal, directed by Darius Martyr, starring Riz Ahmed, Olivia Cooke, Paul Racy, Lauren Ridloff. Those were the only names I really recognized here. And a lot of the deaf community, which I thought was interesting.
Okay, Dad, no, you're up.
Sure. I know this was your number one. What are you putting up?
What?
Wolf, skip me?
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
We're back. Just so the audio audience has there, I'm going to edit some of this. Kevin likes to hold up cards and says, Wolf, skip me?
Skip me.
He hasn't seen the film.
Okay. That's a new bit.
It's a little dog.
No, it's an old bit. We just revived it. You don't remember it. Revived it.
Okay. It must have been from before I was on. Anyway, I know this was on your, this was your number one, and it's...
It was my number one of the year, which you can listen on episode 261 on Extra Features.
Good plug.
No, that would be the worst. You want 260.
Oh, well, listen to both episodes. They're both solid.
Yeah. 260 is the best.
Listen to one, then you'll find the other. You know what I mean? Anyway, this has definitely made it into my top three. I love any film that can use just one of the technical aspects so well, and with the sound design and just how they immerse you into Ruben's mindset of losing his hearing. Because I need subtitles with everything I watch. I don't know if I'm hard of hearing, but one of my fears is losing my sense of hearing. And I found this film very emotional, intense. I loved the music. I loved watching him get involved with the deaf community. I loved the third act when he just learned things that he didn't necessarily need. And just the whole arc of the character, just the whole character study, I thought was so great. And it's pretty sure it's based on, Derek C. in France wanted to do a docu-fiction called Metalhead, and he never finished it. It was stuck in post-production for years, and then he asked Martyr to make a fiction film instead with it. And this is the result with Son of Metal, and I think it's amazing. And a great performance by Rosamed, too. Yes. Just wanted to plug that as well.
Yeah, I love when an actor you know as a character actor gets to be front and center, and that's what Riz Ahmed did here. I knew him from his smaller roles in Nightcrawler,
yes,
or his lead role in the HBO show The Night Of. He was amazing in that.
Right.
And I loved seeing him just come in here, just be the lead of the film, and just completely mesmerizing. He was absolutely fantastic in this. And I love that his character is not perfect. He continues to make mistakes throughout the film, but you understand why he makes them. And that's what made the very end of this movie so heartbreaking for me, is that he knows he messed up.
Yeah.
Now, hold on. Let's pick up on that point. Did he really mess up? Because I mean, he really wanted this.
Yeah, he wanted it, but at the end, he realized it was a mistake.
Yeah.
I feel anyway, because how can I put this into words? What he was doing at the camp was teaching him to cope, teaching him to live. He took the easy way out. And when he heard, I forget his girlfriend's name, sing.
Lou. Yeah.
That showed him he made the wrong mistake. He could not feel the same about the music as he used to, I felt. And that's why he left. And that's why at the end, during the cacophony, he took off the implants.
I agree. A world he's so used to of hearing, and he missed that, and then he got it back in some semblance, and mm-hmm. It's not the same. And I love it how they immerse you in what he's hearing, and how like you can experience that kind of hearing as well. And just the sound of serenity was just like, oh yeah, okay. I didn't even need to do this because he was trying to get his head right, and then he thought he needed that to need Lou, I guess. But yeah,
and he gave up so much for it too.
Yeah.
With what he sold to his be home. Able to afford the surgery.
Yeah.
I think he gave it up because this is his dream. He wanted this band.
Yeah.
He wanted to be in a band, and that was his passion. And I think after losing his hearing and going to the school and working with the kids and learning that maybe he had a new passion, but he didn't want to let Lou down, so he had to go back to where he was. And then he realized he didn't in the end.
I think a bit of all of the above.
Yeah, maybe it is. I mean, it's not really said what the end of the film is. Sorry.
Because he definitely wanted to hear himself drum again, right? And then he was like, oh, yeah. This will not sound the same as well.
I mean, I guess I'm listening to this way. I mean, if I love podcasting this much and I have to give up everything to podcast again, would I do it? And I mean, I guess it doesn't involve giving up my family. It's just money. To me, I'd probably do it because I would miss hanging out with everybody. Sure. Like, I truly enjoy doing this. This is one of these hobbies I like. I have other hobbies I enjoy, but they're very quiet hobbies. I mean, I go powerless, play games, but I don't play online games. I play by myself. So to me, that's all solitude and silence. This is my enjoyment. This is my hobby with my friends. And some of you guys have been with me a long time doing this, and I would miss this. So I get where he's coming from, the character, but I also think this film works because the other characters in the film are all working towards their goals. Like, the guy in the school is working to teach people and teach people how to live with those students don't have a choice. So the teacher is working with them. And Ahmed is there teaching them things. So I think as a viewer, we're learning all the time too.
Yeah.
We're constantly learning information when they sign and when they talk, because we depend on hearing. Well, this film takes that away from us. The one thing we have over these people is our hearing. But they have something over us because they can communicate and we can't with each other.
Yeah.
And we have problems accepting that because we're like, well, what are they saying? What are they doing? You know, not that they're making fun of us, but they have a language we don't speak. And the film allows us into that world. And I feel that's why I like the film, that it teaches me things. And I find the film's very controlling of that world, but it's allowing me in and constantly introducing concepts and allowing characters to grow and have conflict. And everybody seems to have a purpose. I didn't think anybody was a throwaway character I didn't want to see again. I mean, I love the intensity. We all know I love Uncut Gems last year. This is my Uncut Gems this year. I love intensity in films. So to me, this is like a perfect film. I really think it's a good shot at the Oscars for this film. I mean, I know Oldman will be up for Manx, but I don't think Manx is as powerful a performance as this is.
And Bozeman for Ma Rainey.
Yeah.
I think Bozeman has a problem that he is not, he's a very strong Ma Rainey, great performance, but he's not the focal point of the film.
He's a good chunk of the film.
Okay.
He has to do all the heavy lifting in this. Everything we see is him. I don't know if there are any scenes without him. I'm trying to think if I can think of one. So, to me, he is this film. If he does not portray this character as losing his hearing, and we go through everything with him, to the doctor, to the surgery, to the learning, to the drumming, everything. He makes me feel the drumming when he's drumming the students. I get it. So to me, this is an Oscar-winning performance, and maybe an Oscar-winning film, but I'm not sure I'm ready to say that yet. But it would definitely be in contention.
For one of the sound categories, for sure, I think.
Well, I mean, just that's just how best picture. I'm trying to think what's going to beat this for best picture.
Yeah,
is what I'm more thinking of, because I think this is definitely in the top three for best picture if they do that.
And I do hope Bozeman is in the supporting, because I'd just love to see Riz Ahmed win an Oscar.
So would I. Intern.
I didn't really start enjoying the film until, like you said, when he starts to go to the school and starts learning. And then because he's a drummer, he started showing the kids just the tapping on the whatever that I get from. But when it started out, I said I'm not going to like this, and I got to the point where I'm not liking it. I started losing interest, and then he goes to the school, starts learning the sign language, starts thinking, well, I could help them too. But I felt like the reason for him becoming deaf is his own fault. He's a drunk. He should have been wearing protection for his ears, but he doesn't.
I think a lot of people don't think of that when they first start.
Yeah. Well,
you know, they take it for like sight. Like me and Doug wear glasses a lot. So is Dan.
Glasses.
So, and you do. Yeah. And I've had that sight since grade probably seven.
Six for me.
So I take it for granted. The glasses will be here forever, but my eyesight's not getting better.
Well, my brother got the laser surgery done, so that's not an option for me. But still, I just felt it was like, I just felt it was a better film once they got into the, once they got into school and he started learning how to, what, like learning the sign language, because as you said, learning a new skill, and it's interesting to watch people's sign language because it's bringing you into their world.
Yeah.
Well, I think this film is really locked down by a Best Supporting Actor nomination that's going to come out for the feature. I don't remember the man's name. The guy that
Paul Racy.
Yeah.
Paul Racy was phenomenal. I thought he was just great in this.
I think Cook has a chance too.
I think Cook's a very, she's not in it enough. I mean, unless we're going to give it to her, just go here. I think she's in it. She's there, but she just serves more of a plot point than actual heavy lifting.
But the support of to him, I think, was important.
No, I get what you're saying. Joking. I guess we'll have to see. I think there's just going to be better options out there, but who knows? She may get a number five slot.
So, and just to Bob's point of thinking that like this is his fault, it's definitely an occupational hazard for sure. But and I get what you mean, like that he had like what 20% of his hearing left, and then he was like, they were like, just take it easy for a bit, don't do anything loud, and then the next scene is heartbreaking, was just him going back to doing it and thinking it would fix himself. Yeah. So I see what you mean in that way.
And then he gets angry in the RV later on. He starts destroying stuff because he knows he can't. He's not going to get his ear back.
Yeah. Fair enough.
A very short film if he just says, okay, I'll go for the hearing, the surgery right now. Boom, gets it done. That would have been a very short film.
That wouldn't be enjoyable.
No.
You know what would be enjoyable, Bob?
What?
One Night in Miami.
Are we having a one night in Miami?
Yeah. I was going to do on their tour. Did they ever have one night in Miami?
I was trying that. We never got that. It was
going to
be my thing.
One Night in Miami, directed by Regina King, starring Kingsley Benadire, Eli Gorey, Aldous Hodge, Leslie Odom Jr., Lance Reddick, Joaquina Calicongo. I'm so sorry, Joaquina. Michael Imperioli. I should just really take those names out that I can't pronounce.
You're done. Kevin, you're up.
All right. Well, I'd heard a lot of great things about this movie, so I was a little disappointed. I thought the performances were okay, but I didn't find it riveting. I was kind of bored for most of the movie. I actually quite liked the guy that played Muhammad Ali. I thought he was very good, as was the guy that played Jim Brown. Actually, all of them were good. I just wasn't like enamored with the film itself. I wasn't pulled in. So maybe I'm a racist.
Okay. I'll help Kevin out.
I hope I'm not, but
I agree with you 100%. My major problem with the film was the directing. I think Regina King has some general issues being a first time director. I don't think she quite understands how to make a shot unstatic. I found she was using the same shots over and over again, no matter where she was. Mm-hmm. I felt all the hotel room shots didn't do anything for me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I got it. We're talking. Can you shoot from a different angle? Can you try something different? But no, it was always the same blocking, same shooting. I love the scene when Malcolm X plays a record and starts making fun of Sam Cooke. Mm. I thought that was hysterical. I'm like, wow, what a slap in the face. The guy that plays Muhammad Ali, I definitely think did a better job than Will Smith's Ali, which I think is just a flawed film. Mm-hmm. I do think that. But I think my biggest problem with this film is it's talking, which is great. It works probably as a play, but I found just sitting here, there's just not enough as a viewer going on.
Yeah,
It's talking, which is fine. There's no issues with that, but they're stuck in a one-room motel room. It's a big motel room, but I just found nothing really happens for me. It was interesting conversation, but it might have been more interesting for me to read it as opposed to watch it and let my visuals work in my brain.
Well, I agree. I kept thinking that I would have enjoyed this more if it was a play. If I was forced to sit in my chair and watch the four actors go at it on stage, I would have been more interested. Sorry?
I agree.
It is based on a play.
Yeah.
Ken Powers wrote the screenplay, stage play, and then adapted the screenplay as well.
But Ken Powers also wrote Soul, so explain that to me.
He did both. I don't know. What do you want me to explain?
So my issue is, I think we needed a more experienced director, but I think because it involved an all-black cast, they wanted a black director. Regina King stepped to the plate. I'm not saying it was terrible. I'm just saying I had some issues with the directing.
And I don't.
So go ahead, you two.
Sorry, I was just gonna say I don't think the only important thing about directing is the shots. I didn't have any problem with the shots. I mean, she gets so many great performances from this cast. She gets the look of each character down, and which I thought was great. Like King Benadir looked like Malcolm X. I thought they all looked like their characters. Eli Gorey was amazing. Just like the youthfulness of him and the energy, I thought was great as Muhammad Ali. Well, Cassius Clay for most of the film. Same thing. Anyway, thought the performances were great. I found it found a lot of life when they went up on the rooftop, and then Malcolm X and Sam Cooke Jr. really went into each other. I thought that was great. And then they went down into the motel room for most of the second half takes place. Most of the film, in fact. I connected with the conversations. I thought it was interesting. I love the line where you could move mountains with your finger. I thought that was great. I forgot what Sam Cooke's big song was. So when that happened, I got like chills when they just start singing Born by the River in the last few minutes. I just thought it was a powerful film, powerful conversations. I thought Regina King did a great job as a first time director, and I'm looking forward to what she does next. And I thought I don't usually love films based on plays, but I connected with this one.
So I want to back you up to the look of the characters. You're giving that credit to Regina King. Did she have something to do with casting? No.
On casting, no, I mean, which she had getting the most out of their performers.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's a part of director's job.
Not letting this go for a second.
Okay.
You have Odom Jr., who's just a phenomenal singer.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, we watched him in Hamilton. I don't think Regina King needs to give him much direction other than, I need you here. I mean, I think he knows he's doing.
Well, she needs to tell them, like, I want you to say it this way. I want you to say it with this power. I want you to try
so
it a different
way. So she's giving
them
a line reading? Is that what she's trying to say?
Well, that's direction. That's telling
that's
them how.
That's line reading. I want you to say it this way is a line reading.
Well, but that's part of direction, telling them how she wants her to say it and then how to do the performance and assisting them get the best of their performance. That's direction.
And also, I think you're saying the look. That's casting. That's not Regina King.
It's casting.
Well, you're saying the directors are involved with casting?
I don't know in this case. I'm asking. Right.
I think they're usually involved, yeah.
Okay. I think she was in this from the beginning.
Okay.
I don't know, though. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like
I'm just asking.
You see, unless all four actors were in the play and she just filmed them from, like, took them from the play and cast them in the roles.
Okay.
I think
so
she would have had a part.
These people had already done this play ahead of time?
No, I don't know. No. She may have, but I don't know that.
I don't think they did.
I think she would have had a say in it. And she would have had a say in makeup and costuming. Most directors are involved in that. Blocking of the scene.
Yeah, I just need some work.
I guess, a lot of similar shots. I just think there's a lot more to directing than just that. And I thought that was the shots work for me in the way that it's just a play.
See, I'm with Daniel. I actually think she did a very good job directing here. With it being based on a play, she could have been hamstrung by just having everything take place in the hotel room. She actually opened it up there. All four characters were introduced in different ways. She had the four leads go up to the roof as opposed to staying in the hotel room the whole time. There was the scene, my absolute favorite scene was when Malcolm X was on the phone to his daughter. I loved that scene. It brought a human aspect to Malcolm X, and I thought that was really needed because in this film, I think Malcolm X was kind of he was more totemic, I think. He wasn't really a character as much as he was the time he represented the times that were going on. And we're hearing Simon in the background now.
I've muted him.
Okay. But I felt Malcolm X was kind of yeah, he was representative of the time, not necessarily a character to begin with.
Okay.
But then the scene with his daughter, that brought out the human side of him for me. And then the end, not the end, but when you see Sam Cooke on stage, I think it was the Boston show they were talking about, and the sound goes out, and he's just up there by himself, and you see Malcolm X's perspective of that, that was wonderful. When yeah. you just hear the audience, you don't even hear Sam Cooke singing, you just hear the audience doing the percussion and bass. That was wonderful. I love that, and I think Regina King actually did an incredible job directing.
I agree. I muted you, by the way, Simon. I have that power.
In turn,
I got to go with Daniel and Doug on this because, like, it was the time of the civil rights in the 60s, and there was already a movie. I realized there was already a movie about the civil rights movement with Selma, but I really enjoyed it. Like, the because it was the time and it was the civil rights movement, and as Daniel said and Doug said about the directing of the characters, and each one brought their something AK. To the film, and like there, I know it was like mostly in one room and up on the roof, and there was other scenes that I enjoyed too, but I saw this movie at TIFF and then I had to watch it again for the podcast, but I really enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Did you, while you're sitting there up on the roof watching the film, did you think maybe what other news of the world could I be thinking of at this time?
Did you tell the neighborhood the news of the world? Wah, wah. Directed by Paul Greengrass, starring Tom Hanks, Helena Zengel, Mayor Winningham, Ray McKinnon, Michael Angelo Covino. And yeah, not too many people. Others.
None. There's only like three people we need to discuss in this movie.
Well, character actors with Ray McKinnon, right?
Kev, who's up? Doug? Daniel?
I can go if you want.
Sure.
I love Westerns. I love Tom Hanks. This movie was just okay. It didn't really have much to say for me. It was kind of episodic. It just went from one little adventure to the next. No real repercussions until the very end when Tom Hanks comes back to the girl. It was just okay. It didn't leave much of an impression on me.
You know what's strange, Doug? I feel exactly the same way you did. I'm kind of like, are we seeing the end of Tom Hanks? Not saying he's not going to work. I'm just saying we're not going to see
a leading man type thing you're talking about.
Yeah, maybe it's time for Tom Hanks to say, okay, I'm done. I'm just going to take some lesser roles. I think it's starting to happen. I can't remember the film. Like, we saw that Larry Crown movie, I think it was called. That was terrible.
Yeah. Larry Crown? No.
And this one, to me, it just seemed a world that didn't really exist. It was just so tiny. I felt very claustrophobic at times in this film. That film was supposed to have this big thing. He's sitting there reading the news. I could have fallen asleep during those scenes. I didn't find them at all interesting of any kind. The scenes I loved, is there's one, when he's in the restaurant and he meets the woman that speaks the same language as the dog and the child.
And I think that's Mayor Winningham.
I think that's Mayor Winningham,
Bob. No, it's not.
It's not?
Mayor Winningham was McKinnon's wife.
Oh.
With the two that he gives the girl to at first.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure what the woman's name in the restaurant was.
Well, that was my favorite only scene I really liked in the movie. I was looking really big for the shootout, maybe something would happen. I thought that was pretty mundane. I mean, it was pretty telegraphed when he wouldn't read the guy's newspaper. I'm like, oh, something's going to happen here. When he gets back to his actual house, I thought there was a little bit of drama. But again, I don't think Hanks has anything to do with that. I think it's more of a script giving me something to look forward to. I just felt this was mundane. I don't feel there was much world building in it. I think we pretty much knew the end about halfway through the film. You could pretty much tell yourself what the end was going to be like.
Sure.
I couldn't care less what happened to these people. I had no interest in what they were going to do because nothing they had done was interesting. I thought the girl held her own. I thought she was very well acted, the little girl. But again, I can't recommend this to anybody. Like, it's on. If you need something to watch, you're not going to be disappointed, but you're not going to love it. It'll fill in your hour and 45 minutes, and you're going to move on with your day. Go watch Sound of Metal if you want something good. If you just want a mundane film that won't interrupt anybody, actually, Kevin's parents would probably watch this. They like this kind of stuff. It's non-offensive to anybody. It's just Tom Hanks not doing anything exciting. I think his good days have passed.
I think it's good. I think this. I don't know if it's great. I mean, it's a 7 out of 10 for me. I think Hanks gave a very good performance. I like the little girl. I don't know if it's Hailee Steinfeld in True Grit. Like, the way she came on the scene like that, that's not that level of good. But she held her own. I like their chemistry and how they just built the trust. I thought that was interesting. Maybe this is me being a journalism kid, but I've never really,
because I'm with you on it.
Okay, no. But yeah, I've never seen this occupation where someone just goes around to different towns on screen before. And I thought that was... The fact that someone might have done that at one point in time, I thought that was interesting. And I don't think this was really brought up, but if the people couldn't read, I mean, a dime to hear the news of the world, roll credits. I just thought that was kind of interesting to see. And I got interest out of that, just hearing the stories and seeing the guy's excitement being like, hey, like, did they really get out of that mine alive? I liked that story. And I liked it in the Western scope. I liked the shootout with the guy that was trying to take the kid. I thought that was well shot. It's a recommend for me. I don't know if I wouldn't put it on my best of list, like I've seen a lot of critics do, but I thought it was good.
These guys need to get out more.
I don't know. I think it's a good film.
Hold on. You were saying, like, don't you film like Doug would recommend? Doug, isn't this just The Searchers, but a different version of The Searchers?
Maybe it's because I haven't seen a lot of Western.
Maybe less intense. Like, The Searchers, I felt that had more consequences because John Wayne was going to kill her if he couldn't save her. I never felt those kind of stakes with Tom Hanks in this movie.
No, but I feel that this whoever wrote it lifted a bit from The Searchers here at times.
Greengrass wrote this one, or was it someone else?
Paul Greengrass wrote it, with another fellow, Luke Davies.
Yeah, they both need to get out more.
See, I've never seen The Searchers, so I don't know.
Hey, well, who hasn't reviewed it yet?
You.
Okay, Bob.
I got to go with Daniel on this because, like, I still feel that, maybe his days are over, but he can still draw you into his world. Like, Tom Hanks can still draw you into the characters and the world. Because every time I've watched one of his films, like Captain Phillips, he draws you in. I can't say that about Toy Story because, of course, it's going to draw you in. but he, like, I still feel he can draw you into a character and his world. There was one place he went to, I think it was the monastery or something, and his wife had died, and, his wife had died, and he goes to the grave, and you can see the sorrow on his face, and I'm going, that part drew me in as well, and get down if you want, thank you, so I wouldn't not recommended, but at the same time, I get like, what, Daniel, did you give it a 7, you said?
Yeah, my grade is like a 3 out of 4, so 7.
Okay, I think I'd be about a 7 as well, or 7.5 maybe, but the movie as a whole, I don't know. I'd still recommend it to people if you're a Tom Hanks fan.
All right, well, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Thank you.
And I thought Hanks was fantastic in it. And he gives a fantastic performance throughout the movie. Very nuanced. The loss, the sense of dealing with the ramifications of the Civil War, of going to fight for an enemy that you lose against. What's wrong, Simon? You're having a panic attack.
Are you watching the Islanders, sir?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. I thought he was getting upset with what I was saying.
I was like, there's not football on. It's got to be Islanders.
I thought the performance of the young girl was interesting. She'd been raised by Indians and didn't know how to behave around non-Indians. And so she's coming to terms with that, like trying to figure out where she fits in this world. Her connection to Tom Hanks's character. They're both lost souls. I just found his role, his job that he appointed himself of reading the news. He's essentially like the equivalent of a news anchor in a news broadcast at a time when there was no news network. You know, he would pick up the newspapers and then read the news in front of the crowd. And I thought that one scene when the crowd starts getting riled up about the federal government asking for reparations, and he calms the guy down. He says, oh, listen here, you have to understand, we are somewhat at fault for this. We did rebel against the government, you know, and we lost. So let's accept the fact that we lost. You know, we're Americans now. Let's get back to it. The weird thing with the sandstorm and the, you know, encountering the Indian tribes in the sandstorm, that was kind of weird, but still, I thought it was fascinating. And I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
So,
highly recommend it.
I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Nice.
Wow. I actually called my parents up and said, you need to watch this.
Oh yeah.
You'll really like this. Yes.
I was right. See, I'm starting to know what your parents like, but they like Cobra Kai. So
they like Cobra Kai too. Yeah.
Kevin, do you feel this film appeals to you? Because you're a history buff. Most people I know, you love history films.
Yeah, I like this time period. It's interesting. It's dealing with the ramifications of the Civil War, and Texas rebelled against the federal government. So you can see the antagonism from the northern troops when they encounter him on the road, and they've hung the girl, the guy that was transporting the girl with and. You know, he sort of just says, basically, it's your problem now. You have to take charge of this girl and get her to the Indian agent.
Yeah,
sure.
He does.
And they were clearly overworked and not prepared to handle any of it. So, you know, his character starts to feel an affection for the young girl. Like he doesn't have any kids of his own. He starts thinking about his lost love. And I thought that was a great sequence where he goes back home. And he encounters the people he knew in his old life. And they share what happened to the woman he loved and visits her grave. I thought that was very touching and fascinating.
That scene I did like. I did enjoy those scenes.
Yeah.
And that he returns down and just takes the girl away. She's miserable with her aunt and uncle, basically, who are just farmers. Yeah.
I was just wondering, is this fiction or was there like an occupation like this back in this time, or was that just made up?
I can imagine there probably were people who did this, so I don't know if it's historically accurate or not, but I would imagine.
I would say yes. Yeah. I think so. Definitely 100%. Like, this. I mean, it was a very illiterate community at this time.
Yeah.
I also think that they were trying to hit us over the head with a message that was timely, which was don't shoot the messenger, this whole anti-news thing we're on right now. There's a whole segment of people that are calling things fake.
Sure.
So when he goes to the town where the wealthy landowner, the guy that runs the camp or whatever, says, I want you to read the news that I put out, that I create.
Yeah, far
and away. He looks at it and he says, I think people would rather hear real news, real stories of stuff as opposed to the stuff, you know, praising. They've heard all this stuff before. And then that starts off a whole chain reaction within the town. Yeah,
the little riot. I thought that was really well directed.
They say the truth will set you free, right? So,
true.
In this case, it caused a riot. So,
now and
so
in this time, could there be heroes or? We can.
Oh, that was terrible. I know. I was going to ask Doug, because if you listen to David Bowie, we could be heroes.
Okay, that's a better one.
Oh,
Put a poll on Twitter. Let's see who's better, but it's you.
stick to reading the names, please.
Okay. All right. I mean, my one in Miami alternate one was okay. Anyway.
It was fine.
Okay. We Can Be Heroes, directed by this is a Netflix film. Do you want to play the music, Simon, or are we just going to go into it?
If you're busy like me, going to the video store is a hassle. With Netflix, just make a list of the movies you want to see. And in about one business day, you'll get three delivered to your house.
Okay. Read the name, sir.
We Can Be Heroes, directed by Robert Rodriguez, starring Yaya Gosselin, Hala Finley, Priyanka Chopra, Pedro Pascal, Boyd Holbrook, Christian Slater, Sun Kang, Taylor Dooley, Christopher McDonald, and Haley Reinhardt. Now, Doug, did you want to go first on this one? Because you told me kind of a interesting torture for this one.
Oh,
sure. I picked this movie basically to torture my children because when they were younger, they made me watch Shark Boy and Lava Girl so many times. I can't even count anymore how many times I've seen Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
I've never seen it.
So this being the sequel, I wanted to torture them, make them watch it, but after dinner they always left, so I ended up watching it by myself.
Oh, no.
I ended up just torturing me, but it actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I actually ended up kind of enjoying it. It had a good message. I liked seeing Han from Fast and Furious in a different role. And this was it was straight up Robert Rodriguez movie for kids. It looked like computer generated everything, but it had heart, and the kids were pretty good actors. I actually kind of liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it.
Wow.
Although it didn't have Tyler Lautner as Shark Boy, so that
he wouldn't come back.
Yes, I mean he's a bit out of reach. I think Tyler Lautner would be.
No, he said he wouldn't come. What's Tyler Lautner done? Abduction?
Twilight.
He did Twilight. His price is probably too big. Like, no,
after
you have like
Twilight. What did he do? They tried to make him to an action superstar heartthrob. He took his shirt off in every film and stunk the joint up.
Sure.
All his films bombed at the box office.
For sure.
Tyler Lautner's doing nothing but working in my 7-Eleven, selling me a carton of milk.
Oh, no.
With no shirt on.
But Twilight has definitely raised his price.
Look, this film was terrible, Doug. Priyanka Chopra could not act her way down a street trick-or-treating with a bag. Would be difficult for her. It's like she can't put a sentence together. She is so stiff and relies so much on how, look at me, I'm beautiful. Well, you can't act. Stop. Please stop trying to torture me. I'm like, can you learn a different range? Try moving your voice up an octave, below an octave. Maybe stop just staring at the camera going, hi, camera, look at me. She is utterly terrible. I just am bored of Robert Rodriguez. I find he makes his kiddie stuff, shoots it all the same, adds lovely depth to his film, but most of it's a green screen. And I'm like, I've seen this already. I've done this. I like the characters. Do something more. The fight scenes were obnoxiously bad and kiddie-ish. I thought the plot was kiddie-ish and terrible. I was completely bored by this film at all times. I thought the end was silly. Oh, no. Look, we need the stretching kid. We need the strong kid. I just don't care. I thought I was reading a Mr. Man book with my kids. I absolutely hated this film. I'm done. I've seen every Rod Rodriguez film, and of course he's going to make a number two, so I will have to watch it because I've seen every other one. I do not like this. I don't like Priyanka Chopra. I need something a little bit better than G-level entertainment.
I mean, this wasn't made for you, though.
Yeah,
oh, I agree.
This was made for my kids when they were 10 years younger.
Then and he did me. A perfect job.
Made for me when I was 8. Like, when I think that's when I saw Spy Kids. Yeah. So, could I?
Spy Kids
is good.
If I can add on to where you with like, oh, now they need a stretchy kid. I thought it was weird that they didn't just use a teleportation kid again, but I think it was because they wanted everybody to have a chance, a moment to shine. But I think I would have liked this better if I would have like recognized some of the kids. I mean, the main one was okay, but I think they just spent all the budget on obscure actors that you know by face, but not necessarily by name, like Boyd Holbrook. I mean, you know Pedro Pascal, and you'd recognize Han from Fast and Furious, and then you might recognize Haley Reinhardt from American Idol, and then Shooter McGavin's there, and they just spent all the budget on that. And
Shooter McGavin.
And Christian Bale. Not Christian Bale.
Oh, Christian Slater.
Yeah, Christian Slater.
Christian Slater. Yeah.
Christian Bale.
No, you're good. But yeah, sorry, where was I going with that? I thought one part was funny when she started singing Chariots and Fire when the slow-mo kid was going. I thought that kid was annoying, though. But I didn't mind some of the powers, but I thought the kids and the parents were mismatched, where I thought some had their... just the match of their kids and the parents were just like, okay, I thought this would have been this kid's parent, and they didn't really explain that well until we see them reunited at the end. This is way better than the four Spy Kids film, but it was still
terrible.
The four Spy Kids film is one of the worst movies I've seen, so of course I think this is better.
Wait till you see Abduction with Taylor Lautner get back to me.
Oh, sure. But no, this still isn't good. I'm not saying this is good, but it's better than Spy Kids 4. It's a better attempt at... and I actually didn't even know this was Robert Rodriguez until 5 minutes in when I heard the Spy Kids ref. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize this was a Sharkboy and Lavagirl spinoff. I mean, it was cool seeing Taylor with Julius Lavagirl again. But so that was about it. I'm done mumbling.
You know what? It's not made for me, although I love superhero movies. This is like Sky High and other types of superhero movies. It was okay. I'm not going to go rip into it like Simon does, because it's goofy entertainment. Robert Rodriguez threw a bunch of his friends together and said, let's make a goofy superhero movie with our kids, or a group of kids. And
did he dig into the movie, or did he dig into Priyanka Chopra, is the real question.
Well, he seems to have a thing about Priyanka Chopra. So I guess we'll have to watch the White Tiger or whatever that is that just came out.
I just saw that.
There you go. So if you remember,
put it on the list. Performance from Priyanka than this was.
Well, she was better in this than she was in Baywatch. Yeah. That's not saying much. But Alexander Daddario. That's the only guy.
Let's put that back on.
And the blonde, and that other blonde.
Oh, okay,
don't care who the other blonde is.
Yeah, you know what? I guess the tech that Rodriguez is using that allows him to insert people into animated sequences is getting better. That's the only thing I can really say.
Did they reuse the same set from Spy Kids and just repaint it because it looked like Floop's Lair when they're trying to go like on the spaceship?
Maybe.
Probably.
Looked exactly the same, but it was green instead of red.
It was probably shot in Rodriguez's sound stages and outside of Austin. So.
Yep, exactly where it was. Yep.
I do like the first Spy Kids. I'll say that.
Oh, we're all done with Spy Kids. Excellent.
Bob, did you watch this?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, I think I liked it a little more than Doug, even though he liked it. I just a tad more, but it was silly, yes. But it, like, I thought the message was good. Like, getting the kids to like the next generation of whatever. Even though it was a little silly, I still enjoyed it. And I can't think of anything else at the moment.
Oh, sweet. We can move on.
Yes.
It's time, intern. That place where you came from.
The squeaky, squeaky door.
Open the squeaky, squeaky door. Volume down, please. Friends. Okay. What's in the vault today?
Duck Soup. Are we starting with Duck Soup, or are we starting with the most recent film first? Like in terms of release date.
You've already announced a movie, so lead with it.
Duck Soup, directed by Leo McCarey, starring Groucho Marx, Harpo Marx, Chico Marx, Seppo Marx, Margaret Dumont, Raquel Torres and Louis Cowherd from 1933.
I got a question. Has anybody had duck soup ever? Anybody?
No.
I'm not a picky eater, so definitely not.
I've never had opportunity. I mean, I think I would try it. I don't know. I guess I'll start off. This film is so much fun. Big, stupid nonsense. Love it. I crack up every time I've seen this. I think I've seen this numerous times over the year. Margaret Dumont makes my day every time I watch this film. This woman is like a straight, just does what she needs to do, doesn't care what Martin Groucho is doing anytime, and just stares at it. And I love the scenes with Harpo and the brother and the
Chico.
Guy selling Chico. I think they're selling hot popcorn or hot dogs the guy's selling.
And lemonade.
Oh, my God. And yeah. Lemonade, just brilliancy here. And the scene when they're in the other country and they're with the cigars. Oh, my God. Absolutely comic genius at times at work here. I mean, what can you say about a film that's bordering on perfect? It's just not long enough. I think it has a little bit of problems in the third act at the very end, the last about 15 minutes. I thought it was a little rough when they're in the Margaret Dumont's house or wherever they are, trying to hold it down. I thought that was a little rough. But other than that, I think this film is utter brilliance.
You say it's not long enough. I think it's the perfect runtime, because if it goes any longer, I think it's just comedic fatigue, because it's so funny that the 68 minutes is just okay. That's all I need. And thank you, Doug, for putting this on, because knowing I watch a lot of recent films, so I haven't really dove too deeply into the 30s yet. Surprise, surprise, but I loved it.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Sorry, I just got a quick side story. I troll people on Twitter, as we all know very well. This kid, probably about a little bit younger at Daniel's age, I'm guessing, by the way he writes. And he goes to me, name a year. Any year, I'll tell you my five worst films. I'm like, okay, 1936. He's like, I haven't seen any of these films in the year. I'm like, then maybe you should remove your post.
I don't know if he expected people to be like, oh, let's just give an obscure year.
Well, this is me, right?
Yeah, no, I mean,
you know, to play a stupid game like, hey, name a year. Doug would do it. Doug would probably name five films.
He was going to offer his favorite from each year. But yeah, if I would have made that post, I'd be like, okay, name any year except the 30s. Because I haven't seen anything from 36 either,
but
to be honest.
That's me. Yeah, I hate for sure. These little millennials that think they've seen. Oh, look at me. He's going to name 2018. No, 1936, Mark.
Nah, you're going into the vault for that one, buddy. But no, I think I love the... See, this is my first Marx Brothers film. I don't really know their names yet. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen anything from the 30s. Or much from the 30s. I think I like Harpo the best. The silent one. Is that Harpo?
Yep.
Oh, no. Groucho for me steals everything.
No, yeah. Harpo, Groucho. I love Groucho, but I love the silent comedy of Harpo. And then the third.
He actually did that scene with the mirror in a Lucy show, or Here's Lucy, or whichever one it was.
Okay. Now,
just the facts.
That's all three of them doing it. Because they look so alike in those scenes. That's all three of them doing it, though, right? Doing that bit? With the mirror scene?
Yeah.
Okay,
he pushes them out. He says, no, ruin it.
Okay, yeah, because they all look like Groucho, so like I assumed it was all three of them doing the bit. Yeah, but
it was all three of them dressing up as Groucho.
Yeah, and I kept looking for the fourth brother, Zippo, but I didn't realize he was just the straight man. He was the secretary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, thank you for putting this on. I'm going to rush to watch Animal Crackers at some point. Nice. I enjoyed it a lot. I was thinking about memeing to Simon. Like I hated this. It's black and white. What do you like? I hate black and white. But no, this is just so good.
You wait to my next episode. I'm putting 7 out of 8 black and white films with subtitles.
Oh, I love subtitles.
Not black and white ones. Kevin won't watch any of them.
I was just memeing.
Sign up 40 times.
Depends on the movie.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. Thank you, Doug.
I'm happy you liked it.
And thank you, Marx Brothers.
I mean, this is one of my all-time favorite films, and I figured a lot of the movies this week or this episode were close to 2 hours, a little over 2 hours, so I wanted to put something on that was short and just a blast to watch. I love in this particular movie where they all play Groucho, and one of the most famous lines in the movie, it's attributed to Groucho, but it's Chico who says, "Who are you going to believe, your eyes or me?" And that it's a definitive Groucho line, but it's Chico that says it, and I love that. My one complaint is it does end abruptly. That's it. But aside from that, absolutely one of my all-time favorite films.
Oh, dear. Okay, nice. Did you not like it, Bob?
You know what? I used to watch these films with my dad because he was a big, like, the comedians of the time, like Marx Brothers, Laurel and Hardy, et cetera, et cetera. When I first watched it, way back when like my dad and I watched it, I enjoyed it more, and I'm sorry, Doug, I enjoyed it more then, and then this time I watched it, I'm going, it didn't do anything for me. Like, I couldn't find anything funny. I like the scene where they do with the mirror, yes, but I couldn't recommend this film, because, like, I used to enjoy it, but now I don't know what's happened.
I was expecting your take to be mine.
Except for the mirror, yes.
Okay.
I mean, wait, no. The mirror was the best scene that I thought of. I watched it. It's just like, I guess maybe I need it either. No, it couldn't be longer, because that would have been worse.
You couldn't find anything funny.
No, I usually if I see a comedy, I usually laugh and laugh at you know how I get when I'm laughing.
No, I know that.
Yeah, I just sat there going,
okay. I'm not saying you have to find this funny. I found it very funny and very amusing. But I'm just like the scene, even when they're with the fourth brother, that you didn't find the cigar scene funny.
Nope.
Are Groucho doing Groucho all the time? And,
nope. I guess maybe I gotta like watch other Marx Brothers movies to get back into it.
I don't think you do. I just don't think you like
them. I guess it was like I can't get those times back because watching that kind of movie with my dad.
Okay.
Right? I can't get that back.
It's a sadness. Maybe you're having a sadness.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
Okay, I can accept that. I get that. I mean, I would have that with one movie we've never done.
Because I wanted to enjoy it because it is the Marx Brothers. I wanted to.
Sure.
I just couldn't. And I'm sorry, Doug.
Oh, you have nothing to apologize for. Yeah.
Listen, people can like or not like what they want. Don't worry
about it. Unfortunately, I did not revisit this for the podcast. It's been a long time. It is a classic. It satirizes everything. And a lot of inspiration here for Cerebus, aspects of Cerebus the comic, which used Groucho Marx as Lord Julius. So throughout the whole high society storyline, Harpo and Chico are in there, and they each are like essentially doing the same things they're doing here with Fredonia and Sylvana, and they're trying to manipulate things and manipulate Lord Julius and manipulate Cerebus. But anyway, classic movie. I don't know what more I can add other than if I had a copy, I might have revisited it, but I didn't have a time to get it.
I do have a question. When it's really cold inside, do you let the spy come in from the cold?
Wait, before we move on, do you mind if I just ask real quick? That's why I put the pen up. I was just okay. we'll do it again. I was just gonna ask. Did this style? I think this because me, Kevin, and Simon watched that film, The 20th Century. Simon, did this remind you visually of that film? Just looking back, revisiting this, just the
simple. I can see that. Sure.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that wasn't worth the pen, but I just wanted to bring that back. No,
it really wasn't.
But that's okay.
So open that door for the spy.
All right. The Spy Who Came In From the Cold. Directed by Martin Ritt. Starring Richard Burton, Claire Bloom, Oscar Werner, Sam Wanamaker. I don't know if there's anyone else important, but...
No.
I just wrote a couple down.
I'll start. Thank you, Doug. This is a clear thank you for me. I freaking love this film. Nice. I absolutely came home. It was just one of those days, just a long day. Like, oh, better watch Doug's next movie. I like John Le Carré pops off the screen. I'm like, oh, I hate John Le Carré for books. I haven't liked one film I've ever seen him be filmed in.
Not even Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy?
It was okay.
Okay.
I freaking love this movie. Oh my God. I did not want to be disturbed for 2 hours. I was so into this, it wasn't funny. I couldn't get enough of it. And at one point, I had to go out. I didn't want to go out. I had to take my daughter skating. I'm like, I need to finish this. I so want to know how this ends. I was shocked what a good actress Claire Bloom was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew Richard Burton could act, but I had no idea. I was riveted by this whole film. I had no idea about the ending. I was trying to rack my brain out where they're going to get out of this. And I guess, spoiler alert, it has a friggin' fantastic ending. The ending of this film blew me away. I love the acting. I love the writing. I mean, the shooting alone. Oh, my God, that opening shot of the movie. It was just phenomenal. And it doesn't stop. The cinematography for me, I can just eat it up all day. Shot blocking, set design, everything is there in this film. Thank you so much. I love this film. Strong recommend.
Nice. Yeah, I picked this movie because John Le Carré recently passed away, and I wanted to pick one of his films to discuss. I really wanted to do The Constant Gardener, but I'm only halfway through the book, so I didn't want to watch the movie before
finishing.
You've
never seen it?
No, I haven't.
Seen it because I had to watch it for our Oscar show. Kevin, weren't we doing the show when Constant Gardener was around?
Yeah, I know. I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we did do it. I don't know if we did decide to discuss it on the show, but I know we all saw it for the Oscars that year.
Ray Fiennes, yeah.
But I chose this one because, aside from Tinker Tailor, this is my favorite adaptation of one of his books. Mm-hmm. And this was just amazing. I love this movie. It's pretty much the opposite of James Bond. It's mm-hmm. not big action spy film. This is probably more realistic. It's all about subterfuge and getting people to say things that they probably shouldn't say, and deep undercover. Richard Burton's character had to give up his life for a couple years really to get to the point where the Germans would want to bring him in to get information. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant, and I love this film.
I also want to thank you, Doug, because I have the Blu-ray of this. I've had it for a while, and I'd not gotten around to watching it. So I popped it in the 4K player today, and first off, the film looks gorgeous. I was thrown off that it was 1965, because it definitely has a 1955 look to it. Mm-hmm. It looks like an older film than what it is. But there are a couple of scenes of such a focus. Was fantastic. There's a scene where they're in what I guess is a English equivalent of a strip club, and he's having drinks with the guys, and he ends up talking to one fellow in particular, and the girl is stripping in the background, but she's still kind of in focus, and you can see every detail in the room. And I thought just the framing, the look of it, I was very impressed. And Richard Burton is definitely one of the best performances in his career, I think. Mm-hmm. They definitely put it down as one of the best spy films ever made, because it is so much the opposite of James Bond. It's, he's sent in to play the Russians, or the other side, I guess, in East Germany, or West Germany. No, East Germany, sorry. Let's get my maps right. But he's, he doubts himself. He doubts his nation along the way. But he's sent in to play a part and give them misinformation. And he starts to doubt himself. And the fact that Claire Bloom's character just shows up there at the trial was interesting. As she was part of the Communist Party. But she loved him. And I don't know why they let him go. I think that's what threw me off at the end. a little bit was why do they send him on his way? Is it because that one guy is a mole? He's another English mole that's there?
I think so. Mm-hmm. It's been a while. I will admit it's been a while since I revisited this film, but I believe that was the case, that there was somebody else inside.
And the fact he could have escaped, but chose to save the girl. And in so doing, he was killed himself. Like that scene on the wall and Smiley's calling him to him. You know, he's there. He's made it. He's escaped. He can go back home. He's for a while there, he doubted whether or not his the country was there to support him or not. Anyway, I thought it was fantastic. And I've seen a few other Le Carre film adaptations. And there's some interview material on the Blu-ray that I'm going to revisit tonight after the show.
Speaking of framing sequences, the scene when he's in the library being interviewed by that woman, mm-hmm. phenomenal. Like a throwaway scene. Literally, you don't even need to see that scene in the movie. The way they shot that cut back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it just looks beautiful. Even the library shots. I can't believe the depth they got in the library. When he's just having a conversation with Claire Bloom, that library looks as big as my house. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it wasn't. Like, that's the thing I want to give credit. Like, they get a depth of field. I'm shocked. For such a close-knit film, and you're always tight in a room, I find on this. There is one street shot.
Aside from the opening sequence, when the guy's trying to defect.
Yeah. And then when he comes out of the restaurant and gets in the taxi. Mm-hmm. And I love the way they pull that, and again, give you that wide angle shot that they do at the beginning. Like, this cinematographer, I hope, won something for this, because it's just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Bob?
I have to thank you, Doug, for having me watch this because, like, I don't think I've ever seen a Richard Burton film, but, I love the first opening when the defection is going on. After that, it started, don't get me wrong, I loved watching the film because I hadn't watched it before, but after the first, like, 20 minutes, it started falling apart for me. I don't know why, but I'm glad I watched it because now I can say I watched it and I might revisit it because like it there's certain scenes that I want to see again, although I don't want to see he goes into the store and becomes really violent. I guess he was drunk. Is Richard Burton drinking at that time himself?
I presume, yes.
I think that was the problem I had because like he becomes violent and I stopped enjoying it almost at that point.
I agree with you. I don't know if that scene was really needed.
I don't think it was.
That scene in the restaurant, I just thought it was a silly scene. Doug, you've read the book. Is it more to it than what we saw?
Maybe I haven't read the book yet. Maybe that's what
Well, it helps set up his cover. It helps give him the history of being a violent person with a criminal record. It sets that up so that way other spy agencies can see that maybe he is getting disillusioned with the British government and what he's doing. So it's all spycraft.
Okay, I was missing something. So I probably have to visit the book and then revisit the movie again.
I don't think that's in the movie. I think it's not.
Well, no,
there.
Because the book is different. I know that, but I would probably enjoy the book. And then if I revisit the movie, what the heck?
I just sent you all the awards that it won and was nominated for.
Oh, thank you. I was going, what? But I might have to revisit the movie because, like, I was missing certain scenes for some reason. And I didn't get it, so I don't know. But thank you for thank you for putting it on for me to watch.
Well, okay. Doug, Kevin, thank you for saying it. It's right here. I mean, best actor leading role, Richard Burton. Best art direction, set design. I mean, it's all here. I mean, exactly the stuff
we're talking about. Academy Awards were nominees. They were nominees.
Right. Best British Cinematography Award. I mean, we're saying it right here. This film deserves something from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Actually, a little interesting bit of trivia. In the book, her name was Elizabeth, but they changed it to Nancy for the film because the studio didn't want to have Richard Burton criticizing Liz in the movie because he was in a relationship with Elizabeth Turner at the time.
What's fascinating too is that he'd had an affair with Claire Bloom before, and so and he just married Liz, and she was hanging around the set, so there was a little bit of friction there. Liz wasn't too impressed that he was on screen with an old girlfriend.
So. Too bad for Liz.
I'd also like to thank you, Doug, because it's on my watch list now.
Okay. What I thought was really strange, when they were driving through the forest, they didn't see any grizzly men anywhere. I thought there might be a bear or something there.
You want to get Grizzly Man? Directed by Werner Herzog, with Timothy Treadwell and Werner Herzog.
Timothy Treadwell. Come on. I'm Timothy Treadwell, and I'm Grizzly Man.
Oh, no.
Kevin, did you see... Oh, Daniel, did you see Grizzly Man?
I did.
You're up.
I can go first since I did not watch the last film. I enjoyed this a lot. This has been on my watch list for my, big IMDb watch list for a while. So thank you for making me watch this one. And also, it's very funny to me that it's just Minnie Driver on Simon's screen right now.
Yes. She has the microphone poised and ready.
Speak, Minnie. Speak. Oh, that sounds weird. Sorry.
Oh, here comes Maxie.
Oh, Simon's back. Okay. I enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was heartbreaking. I thought the different perspectives of just people thinking about if what he was doing was right or wrong, I thought that was interesting. And Herzog himself disagreeing on just the unity of nature. I thought Treadwell had a lot of compassion, and I was brought into it by that. Some of the stuff he did was insane. Like when he petted the bear when he was trying to take a swim with it, and the bear was like, what? And that was kind of crazy. I liked the talking heads a lot, just getting the perspectives. I really wanted to punch that one guy in the face that said he had it coming and that he deserved it. Just the guy who was on the cleanup crew. Cause I didn't agree with that at the beginning. Cause it's just very insensitive, but I could see where some of the people came from, like the Inuit Native American guy saying, oh, like these are our beliefs that you leave the bears alone and then you just do your own thing. And these going against that, I thought that was an interesting perspective. And I was compelled by all of this. I enjoyed it a lot.
I will pick up from Daniel left off just with a quick antidote. I gave the intern a photo for me for TIFF. I think it was on Thursday night. Herzog was here for something. And I gave him a photo of a grizzly man. And Herzog goes to Bob, intern, if you don't know if you remember, just goes, that's a real bear! In the photo, and he signs it. I don't know if intern remembers telling me that story, but he did. So I think, Doug, thank you. This has been on my watch list for years. People have recommended to me. I've read articles on it. And I just said, I don't watch documentaries. That's really not my thing. Oh, my God. Let me rephrase that. I mean, this was awesome. I learned so much about Timothy Treadwell, who I knew nothing about, never even heard of the guy. But I think his story is fascinating. I think this man is insane. But I think he was trying to get his message out. I think he felt he needed to do this. And I have no issues with what he did. I feel bad for the guy who got eaten by a bear. I don't think I'm ruining anything. I think that's stated pretty much right at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think at times, I don't think he pushed his boundaries. I think it was weird that people were trying to taunt him and stuff. Remember when those guys were coming to get him on the boats? The other poachers, I thought that was just strange at times. But I mean, I'm glad he left this mountain of footage so we can learn about things and learn about bears. I mean, maybe people learn things they didn't know, at least I did from the film. And I think Timothy maybe had pushed his luck at this point with his bear, from what I'm understanding. Herzog, I don't think, says that in the film, but at least I felt he did that. But I don't think he had any way to communicate with the outside world if he did want to leave. I think he had a period he was supposed to be picked up on, so he was kind of stuck. But he should have maybe moved away from the bear You know what I mean? It sounds like he knew this bear from what we're understanding here and knew maybe it was probably a problem. He knows these bears fairly well. He seems to give them names. He seems to communicate with them. He does retakes with them.
Well, this was a different bear.
Yeah.
The bears he knew had migrated to another area, and this was other bears coming, I think, coming down from the mountain.
That's what I was wondering.
So it's a completely different set of bears than the bears he knew. So that he was definitely pushing his luck here.
This wasn't the one he called Grinch, right? This was a different one.
Right.
I was confused by that.
This wasn't a named bear, I don't think. This was his name bears had gone elsewhere.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, I just felt, I mean, it was fascinating. And, I mean, I think he could have made a lot of money if he'd done things a little bit differently. I mean, obviously lived. I think if he lived, he would have made money off this eventually.
Yeah, but he didn't ever take money for speaking engagements or anything like that.
Just silly nonsense in my world.
Kids loved his stories. He definitely did a lot of appearances.
He just loved the animals so much he didn't want to profit from them.
But I'm not saying that. But he needs money for gear, some money, maybe preserving the bears, maybe even have a better tent.
Well, I think there was definitely some undiagnosed mental illness going on there.
For sure.
I think that's stated early.
Just seeing the scene where he's cursing out the people he used to work with, there was definitely something going on in Timothy Treadwell's head. And the person I feel the worst for is his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
I think she was the most innocent victim in all of this.
Well, I think Herzog presents her briefly, that gruesome when they're talking about her body. And what happened, and the shot, he shows her coming off a plane, and we can't really see her. Mm-hmm. And
that's because they only saw her twice during the film.
Right, and you don't see her. So I felt that was kind of bad, that she kind of... And he did ask to interview them, and they didn't want to interview her. Her parents, I think, said no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, being a parent, I understand that's rough, but I think it would have preserved her memory maybe better. I mean, sense, but I do understand them saying no too. I mean, it's their choice. It's their daughter. They can do what they want.
Yeah. Maybe they changed their mind if the documentary was made now, but I don't know.
Might have been too fresh at the time.
Yeah.
Because I remember when this happened. I remember there being news stories about this. So I remember hearing about Timothy Treadwell getting attacked by a bear, and then a year or two later hearing Werner Herzog was going to make a documentary about it. And I think this is probably way off base, but my absolute favorite part of the movie is the one pilot who said that he thinks that the bears thought Treadwell was retarded or something. That makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only time that pilot was interviewed for the documentary, but that just...
No.
That's the guy wanted the punch.
No, no. He talks about where he's going to drop them off and pick them up.
No, that was a different guy.
Oh, that's a different guy.
Yeah, it was the guy wanted the punch that said he deserved it.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember who said that.
Other people might have said that he was retarded. I don't know.
I thought the bears think he's retarded. I just think that was funny as hell.
Well, something is off with him. I mean, I think we get that from him doing numerous takes, and every bear has a name, and he's discussing bear scat and
this stuff. I think with the takes, he was just dedicated filmmaker. But yeah, with touching the poop, the fresh poop, there's like it was inside of her.
kind of freaky. Okay. Would you want to come over and touch mine next? Like, whatever makes you happy there, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
So, are we moving on to buying things? Has everybody talked about it yet?
Bob hasn't talked about it. I haven't talked about it.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. When you gave me this movie, I wasn't sure what to... I looked at the title and I'm going, what's this about? I never heard about him. I never heard that he was eaten by a bear. And I thought, I don't know what to expect from this. So I started watching it. I'm going, it's getting interesting. And I thought, like, cinematography is great. Werner Herzog is directing it really well. I like the story. And then I started getting really into it. And I thought, this is good. So I really enjoyed it. So thank you. Thank you, Doug. And thank you, Simon, for giving it to me to watch. Because I really enjoyed it.
Nice. All I will say is that living with grizzly bears is a complicated profession. I didn't see all of it. Unfortunately, the clock ran out. So I did see the part where the pilot was basically describing finding what was left of Treadwell and his partner. He definitely seemed like there was something wrong with him, undiagnosed or diagnosed. And he definitely got stuck dealing with bears that he wasn't familiar with, and they reacted. So, because you think, like, he was there for, 13 consecutive summers?
Yeah.
And those bears grew up around him. So you can see in the footage he's talking about, though, I remember when this one was just a little bear, and they knew him. They were familiar enough to stay away and stay out of each other's way, even though he was kind of in their face about a lot of stuff, too. All that stuff about how he's a samurai warrior and so forth. To me, that kind of said he's putting himself in a particularly dangerous situation where he knew that there was danger. So I feel bad for him and I feel bad for his partner, but I also think he was aware there was a danger to this. It's unfortunate, but you're dealing with wild animals and, and they're not going to behave in any way that you think they're going to behave. They're not, you know, well, you can.
Yeah, I felt bad when they said they went in and killed the bear that killed him because the bear was just doing what a bear's going to do.
True, but I think they have to in some cases because once a bear has murdered someone and eaten them, there's a worry that the bear will, like a dog, like the bear will want to approach and see other people as food.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? So when a wild grizzly kills someone, usually they go in with a hunting party and take them out.
Yeah, and he's got an old age too. Though I just wanted to just bring it back to the mental illness for a second, just because I just remembered that there was one point in the film where they were discussing that he was on antidepressants, but he felt it was too medium, and he wanted the highs, he wanted the lows, because that was his personality. So it seems at least depression was prescribed or diagnosed at least, some version of that.
And let's not forget, he was also the second choice to play Woody in Cheers.
I thought that was interesting.
Missed it by this much.
Like, imagine where he would, what would have happened to him. Like, would Woody Harrelson have been the grizzly man? If the roles were reversed?
I think he'd be a pot seller somewhere.
Someone in an alternate world is envisioning this.
He would have been Snyder on SNL. You're putting your weed in there, man. So, did anybody buy anything, especially Mr. Boyd?
Nothing.
Mr. McBride?
I did.
What'd you buy?
I bought a combo pack of Green Mile and The Shawshank Redemption because I've never seen either one of them, and it was $5. So I thought, I got to see this because everybody's always saying, well, you got to watch Shawshank Redemption, and I never have. Dinner with Friends, Undertaker's The Last Ride, a Patrick Stewart movie called Christmas Eve, and a Queen Latifah movie from 2006 called The Last Holiday.
You've never seen The Last Holiday?
No.
Oh, I saw that. I remember watching that with my wife.
I'm surprised you came out of this by saying I'm surprised. I haven't watched The Last Holiday. Why wouldn't you say you haven't watched The Green Mile or you haven't watched The Shawshank Redemption? You came out with, you haven't seen The Last Holiday.
I know The Green Mile and Shawshank are intern movies.
Right.
But I'm gonna have to watch them
because
you would watch.
Yeah. Green Mile is my favorite movie.
But I've never seen it, so like everybody's always saying,
It's still gonna be his favorite movie.
No.
What?
You're saying I've never seen it, and like I've never seen it. Well, it doesn't matter. It's still Daniel's favorite movie. He's allowed to have a favorite movie.
Okay. Let me know what you think.
I wasn't saying anything against Daniel. That's not what I was saying.
Let me know what you think of it when you see it. When you watch it,
Green Mile.
Yeah,
I will.
So I got to say, I'm very excited to see the movies that are coming to Disney Plus later this month, or later February.
The Squirrel movie.
So no, on February 23rd, Disney Plus Canada is getting something called Star. So we're getting over 500 Fox movies added to Disney Plus.
What?
As well as a number of about 1,000 television shows.
So, Fox television? Wow. Fox and television shows?
Yeah, 20th Century Fox.
Simpsons like and shit?
House of Buggin?
Yeah. No, like MASH. Other shows. There's, no, I want there's a House list of online. House I'm sure of it's there.
With John Leguizamo.
Eight Simple Rules for House Dating My Daughter.
Oh, we're doing a whole episode of House of Buggin', people. Just wait. Super special. Me and the Hainer are going to do a House of Buggin' special.
House of Buggin'?
House of Buggin', John Leguizamo. One of the worst piles of crap you're ever going to see in your life.
Okay.
Well, I'm just excited to have access to it.
So we're done? I can finally tell you guys our famous line?
I didn't buy movies, but I started a Funko Pop collection because I think they are neat.
Nice. What did you get?
5 years behind now?
I mean, I actually got a little baby Groot like 5 years ago, but I didn't even realize it was a Funko because at the time I threw out the box because I didn't even, I didn't know. But I got, I almost have a set of the DC holiday ones. With there's like Flash as Rudolph and Joker as Santa, and I don't know, I like them.
I thought you were going to tell me you got the Hitchcock one, which made me happy.
I got the Freddy, Jason, and Michael Myers one.
Nice. Much better.
Yeah, redeemed myself.
Sure. Okay.
I'm thinking of flipping my Surfer Batman and Surfer Joker from Batman 66.
I remember you getting those.
Apparently they're worth more than what I paid for them, so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
They're like $25 or $26 now, as opposed to $13. So, I have a full set of Flash Gordon ones. Those are my classics for me.
Okay.
So Prince Vulcan, Flash, obviously Ming, and the guy with the gold mask. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I know. He's in Flash Gordon.
Yeah,
Michael Scott from The Office when he has the.
No, the guy that looks like Dr. Doom.
I know. I can't think of his name. Okay, can I wrap this up?
Cletus on board.
Okay. And if they make Funko Pops,
we all thank Doug.
Daniel buys
it. Yes.